candles lit.
it definitely is. It's a David Carradine can of candles.
That's right. Not the future cannot hold me back, even with crappy internet and a late start.
You know what I figured out about this movie, like, really right on, I think Tim and I talked about this, about Future Force.
What's that?
Whoever wrote Future Force, like David Pyle, whatever his name is not good with math. Because, so the movie says it's a Future Force, and the movie takes place in 1991, mm-hmm. but the movie was shot in 1990.
So it's
I looked at
like...
the year it was made. If it was in the 70s, that would be okay. But 1 year into the future, I mean...
It's a dystopian parallel 1991.
It's dystopian
Earth
2,
1991.
It's a dystopian parallel downtown Kansas City, Missouri.
I wrote something about... The feature has a lot of denim.
Oh God, we're gonna share the same on this one there, sir. Let me tell you, man,
that does not look like the future.
This movie Future Force was like the cave level in Super Mario Brothers. Say it with me: denim.
Wait a second here.
It probably has it. It probably has it on
the ringtone. I have some select clips this week, so.
Thank God for the internet, by the way.
Here we go.
Future Force was. I told Tim and I were talking when you were. What are you drinking? You're drinking the Big Red, like the cola.
Yeah. So, I had some visitors. I had some visitors in town, and out of the kindness of my heart, I bought some regular Big Red. And some Big Red and some Big Red Zero for myself because, my ass can't get big. So, I mixed both. I did the My Mom special, the Joy Hokanel special, of the half regular, half diet soda of the same flavor.
I'm surprised.
You know what I drive home by every day on my way, right around Oakland?
What's that?
The Shasta Pop Factory. And at night, the sign looks amazing. I always want to take a picture of it.
I bet
I'm going thousands of miles an hour.
I bet you get the freshest of orange drinks around there.
That's the first great stuff known to man.
Yeah. Ma'am, to hell with this Tampico. Give me some Shasta.
Yeah, but then when I come back to Kansas, I miss because I'm like, ooh, you got Rocky Top.
Well, Big Red is the soda of the South, I guess, or at least here in Texas, which is kind of funny because that's a Nebraska thing, or at least thing. So it's Future Force, and it stars David Carradine. Tim, you picked out this movie. What's it about?
It is about a dystopian 1990s.
I don't know.
And apparently they've replaced the police force with bounty hunters, but they're also called cops. And
what does the acronym stand for again? Like
Citizens on Patrol.
Civilian Operated Police State. But in the movie, they call it Civilian Operated Police Incorporated. So it should be cops. Yeah.
They should have been an LLC, man. LLC is the way to go. But
It does.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, it all depends on whether or not you're signing contracts or not. Typically, you can get away with a DBA or doing business as license. But
wouldn't it be funny if the rest of this podcast just goes into just talking about the differences of LLC?
Well, I mean, it's all really about starting your own business, right? And it's all about whether or not you want to freelance. And starting out with a DBA can do you some good, but you get the liability protection with the LLC.
Well, all I know is the first thing that you need when you start a business is a good jean jacket.
That's right. Preferably one that's sleeveless.
Sleeveless, yes, right. Non-muscular arms.
And if you have some jorts to go with that, then go ahead and cut that sucker up, and you're good to go.
You're all set. The cops are bounty hunters. It's 1991. It just looks like it might be like the crime has risen and everything's falling apart. It just really looks like a bad part of L.A.
Yeah, it looks like people just drive around in shitty cars.
Well, and it's also I didn't realize this just till now, but like it's kind of like a Judge Dredd thing.
Yeah.
You know how yes. Judge Dredd does the whole where they're kind of the judges, the executioners, and but I thought that they were a little harsh on some punishment.
Well, the guy that he killed at the first. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the first part, right? You know, he like we get introduction to David Carradine, and you know, he gets out of his well paid for Cherokee Chief, and he drives a Cherokee Chief, and he gets a bounty on this guy and tries to yank him in, right? So,
but did you hear what the guy? Okay, there's two really quick things I wanted to point out. Like first of all, like. I realize this is a cheaply made movie, but the biggest indicator is, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, is that there was a car chase scene, and there was all kinds of gunfire happening around his car. So it makes me think it's probably somebody in the crew's car that they were using, because it never got the windows broken, or it never got shot up, or no cars were ever wrecked. So my concept is...
The first car got...
The car that... No, watch it. None of that was at a junkyard, so it was already going to be crushed anyhow. But like David Carradine, if you watch, like there was times when it was like they were driving away, and a shot, it's a perfect, well placed shot, blows out the back window and adds the drama.
Oh,
it never happened.
Why?
Because it was the cameraman's car, probably.
No pun intended. I don't want to shoot a hole in your theory, but very first car, explodes. He like uses he blows it up.
That was stock footage. The car that fell over that they pushed over.
I'm talking about. I got that. I'm talking about the very first scene where Kevin James looks like he's dealing drugs, and.
You know what? That was with the two guys who like they decided to run him over. He used the gloves to stop him, right?
Yeah.
Which
their car
blew.
There's so many different levels.
There's so many different mind-blowing things about this movie, and you said it all in one sentence.
It is really bizarre when you stop and think about it. And I said it with like not a hint of irony. I'm like, oh yeah, and he used the glove to stop the car.
Yes, exactly.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever said.
My thing at the beginning of the movie was like, well, do all the bounty hunters have to look like Nick from Family Ties?
That's such a good call because I couldn't figure out who he looked like.
You want to hear something embarrassing about
Nick from Family Ties? When I was a kid and watched that, I thought that guy was cool. I wish I looked more like him when I was a kid. I was like, that guy he got Mallory. I wish I had long hair and a feather earring.
Every time they showed a new guy, I was like, they either had a big old porno mustache or they look like Nick from Family Ties, or both.
Yeah. So I guess I can be kind of right and kind of wrong, but I can say that
it doesn't matter in this movie.
David Carradine's vehicle was obviously somebody's on the set because they didn't wreck it. But the other one that might have been his. That might have been his home.
Oh man, yeah. So David Carradine in his car, he like tries to take these guys in. One of them looks like Kevin James. You can tell he's evil because he had slick back hair and it was a rat tail. And he,
Jason.
Yes, exactly. And the guys for some reason turn on him for no reason whatsoever. They turn on him. So finally, he gets beat up enough. He beats them up enough. You get a lot of meat slappers and fake blood. You get the ooh, oh.
But here's the other thing that's bizarre about that is, okay, so those guys worked at a factory. They got off work. They were talking to their buddy. And did you hear, by the way, this is supposed to be like Future World. The guy said, hey, it's the Cats and Jammas kid. That's like from the 1930s. Cats and Jammers?
Yeah.
And the guy didn't see, like, I thought, wow, the drug dealer guy who he's there to kill seems a lot nicer. He just kind of seemed like, hey, I just came to see my friends at work. And then now he's in like a Wild West shootout, like a quick draw?
Yeah, so that happens. And then David Carradine, the guys try to get away, so he pulls out the glove, not John Saxon's glove that we talked about earlier, which is...
I think Tim has a fetish for gloves.
I did not know their glove was going to be featured in this. I was quite pleased.
Sure.
But I got to tell you, it was at that moment that what we're really doing here is just one elaborate, like, jazz triplet, or not quintet, but a... But we're a power jazz trio, and we're kind of playing off each other's movies by suggesting other movies that somehow abstractly tie into each other, because I had no clue that the glove would be in this movie, and it blew my mind when I saw it. And it blew my mind that he grabbed the car, and he grabbed it through the metal like the first introduction that we saw in the glove like last year in an earlier episode. And then he talks the guys down. He's like, okay, we won't go away. So he goes back to the car, and of course, they double-cross him. They try to run him over, and he blows him up with the glove, because the glove has a laser on it. And, and the hilarious thing is that those guys had speeding tickets! So two guys decide to go against this bounty hunter guy, try to murder him and run him over because they had fucking speeding tickets.
Well, and he had to use the glove.
With the calls of a cat on the track of a rat, while the sinners
are sleeping. Wrong movie, damn it.
Getting ready to leave.
They could have used this.
This guy had more character than David Carradine. I think David Carradine was stoned for this whole movie.
David Carradine really kind of had... There was something wrong with him during this movie.
I mean,
he just mumbled. He was like droopy dog.
I think he was really just strung out, and that pot belly was nothing too becoming for an action star.
Well, he had that weird, like, skinny. It's like the Zen riddle. Like, how can you be skinny and fat at the same time?
you can be David Carradine strung out on heroin filming a Future Force movie.
Boy, I did some research on him, and I didn't realize that he had... I mean, how he died should have tipped me off on some point.
Yeah, we all know how he died. I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah, well, that was the dumb thing I did that I was telling Tim about when you were getting your big red, is that I told him I unfortunately looked up his death and unfortunately saw more pictures than I ever wanted to see.
Oh.
I mean, there was... Oof.
Don't put that on the Facebook page.
Those will haunt me. I would, so it's like, oof. But it's interesting. He had a lot of tattoos.
I could not have guessed that. So.
He had a heart with wings over his heart, and he had like a tiger on his hip.
And,
I have no idea why I'm so weird.
Did he have a tattoo of a noose around his neck?
Oh, well, you know what? Okay, well, we're going to go down that route. Hey, Tim, the glove's coming off now.
Oh, God.
Hey, did you say, come on now?
So what I didn't understand is in the picture, his hands are tied above his head, too. So I was kind of like, ooh. And his family wanted his death investigated by the FBI because they thought it was foul play.
Yeah, it was.
But there were two autopsies then. It wasn't a suicide. They just said that it.
He just accidentally strangled himself to death.
Yeah. But you know what? I have to say, like, he seemed like his. It wasn't just that he was slurring his lines in this movie, but his timing was just really weird and not natural at all. It just seemed like uncomfortable. But he had little moments where. But watching this though, I can see why Quentin Tarantino was like, yeah, you know, that guy gets cleaned up. I want to put him in a movie because he's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Know?
He does have, you know, he does have this little line here.
And I'm gonna kick some fucking ass.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
Great.
And I'm gonna kick some fucking ass.
He's gonna kick some fucking ass.
So David Carradine, after like a day of blowing up people parking tickets, goes, what does he do next? He talks to his nerd friend on the computer in the car, right?
Oh, and you know who that kid, who I thought that kid was at first, and I got really excited. Do you guys remember the Britannica encyclopedia? Remember me?
Oh god, he did look like him.
I got so excited. It's like, oh my god, it's an encyclopedia. That kid was so annoying.
He busts that guy. He kills those other two guys, and he goes in to collect on it. He goes back to the cops' headquarters, which looks like it's like a burnout TCBY place.
Yeah.
With paper taped to the door. So.
Yeah. And they all wear the same denim sleeveless jackets. And they all either have bullets or greasy, or some of them have patches. Some of them are ladies.
I wrote down about the DMZ in my notes. I wrote, tough bar, wimpy music.
Oh, the music is awful.
So after that, right, that's, okay, so that's where I cut off. Well, no, I cut off after that, and then we get the introduction of the reporter TV lady, or the person in the movie who was just there to scream and ask for help all the time. So she is like some reporter, and she has some hot take that like is going to put like this boss out of business, which right before we also get to see the boss played by, I think his name is William Zip.
And he was also the casting director.
That makes sense.
Let me ask you too, so the main villain guy, his name is Jason, and then the bald guy, who actually would have been a better villain just to be the main villain, the crony.
Telly
Smuts. He looks kind of like Baron Von Raschke. I thought he looked like Baron Von Raschke.
He does look like Baron.
I thought he looked like the guy that was the German fighter guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. But I also wrote that he was old guy tough, where he wore like an alligator collar shirt that was tucked into his jeans, and he had an Al Bundy jacket that he could beat the fuck out of.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that. I guess it's kind of a lost generation because now we're kind of becoming those old guys. I just think that it would be funny, like a kid in his mid-20s, you know, with his flat-billed hat and his skinny leg jeans, like talk some garbage to like an old bald guy like that, and that old bald guy just mops the floor with him, you know, because like, oh, hey, old man, because that guy looks like a guy that he's a legitimate badass.
Yeah, it's like the meatheads that Rodney Dangerfield comes up with at the end of Caddyshack. Hey, Moose, Rocco, why don't you go talk to the judge here for a couple seconds?
So there's what I don't understand is how much power they gave this little like ticker tape computer thing. Like no matter what came through there, they were all just like, okay, and, you know, it's just like David Carradine, let's kill him, okay?
It was pretty easy foreshadowing too for what little they had.
Yeah,
they foreshadowed that. The nerd guy,
the Encyclopedia Britannica kid?
Yeah, he was like, he always kept reminding him, hey, there's a remote on a glove. There's a remote, trust me on the remote.
Trust me on the remote, hint, hint, wink.
I know.
Nudge.
Yeah, so the reporter made it to be completely schizophrenic about this movie because it really left me in terrible shambles. The reporter lady gets this tape that apparently shows secret footage of the bad guy, doing something bad. And the bad guy sees it, and since he's, like, the controller of this privately held stuff, puts a bounty on her for treason or some made-up bullshit thing.
But again, not to be, like, the hippie philosophical person who takes that bent on all these films, but what could possibly be in the... There are people, like... gunning each other down Old West style in parking garages. What could possibly be on that tape that's going to damn that guy any? I mean, it's pretty obvious, like, that guy is a rotten dude. And he's like, and it's like, they're like, oh, well, you know, I change those tapes and we wipe them clean and have security of our building. I mean, it's like, dude, no one's going to care. If crime is that bad, it's not going to be an expose on TV that anyone would really...
What's the term for that? Is that kind of like a MacGuffin? Is that what that is? Like, where it's just a reason...
What?
It's just like, the MacGuffin. You know, like, let's go back to Indiana Jones. You know, there's... You gotta look for the Ark, and, you know, or in Pulp Fiction, you gotta find the briefcase. It's kind of like...
Yeah.
It's kind of that one thing that you don't really see, but it kind of helps move the bottle.
It turned out the one thing they were looking for was good acting and a good plot.
So
that's what they were searching for. That was what was on the tape with acting lessons.
So the nerd guy got a head start because he hacked into the system and gave John Tucker the access to the data first, so he could go get her first. And
all the keyboard shots in that, by the way. I liked every time that he was going to hack, they had to show him like typing keys.
Well, okay, and that's what they kind of did. They kind of set, like, the odd couple things up. So, yeah, John Tucker goes into the DMZ, like, what you guys are talking about. And it was, like, the most god-awful titty bar I've ever seen in my life.
It should be called the Granny Panty Bar.
And it's like the only place... It's, like, the only place the other cops, like, hung out.
And they all look so bored, too. They just look like they were just miserable.
It's because they were in a bar at 6 in the morning when they were filming.
So, of course, David Carradine blows up the TV the reporter lady was talking on because she was all bringing up questions about their work.
And they went crazy. When he shot it, you would have thought that they never thought of, like, shooting out the TV or something.
Yeah.
Because when he shot at it, he was like, yeah! And they were all like, oh, man, John Tucker's the man! And I'm like, no, he's just a pot-belly pervert. Oh, and by the way, did you notice that they had his age tattoo?
No.
David Carradine was supposed to be 40. When they showed his printout on the computer, it said 40. And I'm like, my... German teacher that he's 40.
Well, also the printout on the computer, he had a big old smiling face, and it's like, no, that was
his headshot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, what you've done, this is my favorite, would have made the movie a better thing, and I hope that you guys would, you know, will maybe agree. And you know how Sonny Boy, how, like, they never really explained anything? Wouldn't it have been wonderful if John Tucker picks up the woman for the bounty and it's David Carradine as that woman? And no one says anything, so it's just the whole movie is just him with him in the car. And he's in that, wearing that, what was his name in Sunny Boy?
Pearl.
Yeah. But I mean, that would have been, I was like,
John Tucker.
John
and Pearl.
John Pearl.
Oh, man. So, of course.
And by the way.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say, by the way, do you think that, I have this really weird idea, too, that the guy who wrote and directed this, and honestly, he made a sequel. So this guy was really, on some level, this guy was probably like, you know, these are my movies, and I'm going to make a trilogy. It's going to be big, and I'm going to make a sequel. And do you think that, like, after he was, like, washed out and everything, and he, you know, I don't know, working at Blockbuster when that movie was released, John Tucker Must Die, that he was really pissed? You know, like, or maybe he thought, well, now they're going to confuse my movie with that movie. They can't use the name John Tucker in that.
That's David Carradine. Why are you selling David Carradine's memory?
Yeah, or even he's even more deluded, and he thought that teenage movie John Tucker Must Die starred David Carradine. He's like, well, that's some interesting casting for a teen movie. But...
good job, John. Good job,
right? Sorry, I'm sorry. I'll stop sidetracking.
Oh no! No, I kind of have to remember what happened. So he obviously finds her really quick, right? He finds her really quick. And then right out of the blue, and we get this we get the beginning of a continuous loop of the same shit, where like two bounty hunters show up out of the blue, and they talk a bunch of shit, and then John's like, nah, and then like, oh yes we are, and then he like kills one of them, and then like the other one walks away, and it pretty much leads us on another never-ending cycle of that kind of stuff for pretty much most of the movie.
That was right before he, right after that scene where he had the encounter with his two fellow bounty hunters. He's driving down the street and they have the strangest music I've ever heard for a car show.
Oh, I wrote that down too. Do you have that music?
Yeah, here we go. It's got gunfire.
Oh, yeah, did you have it?
Here we go.
By the way, they did one of my dad's cardinal sins that drives him crazy in movies still to this day. Is they were driving on dirt and their tires squeaked. Like, that drives my father insane. Also, he's like, oh!
They're also shooting cars with a shotgun and there was no damage.
Well,
yeah. I'm telling you, it's because it was somebody's car.
And they somehow happened to be driving right next to Bayside High, too. What kind of music is that? It's like I'm watching, like, yeah, Baywatch or something. It's like, what the hell? Is that...
the song in the bar was really bad, too. And it was like, it sounded like steel drums. And the song was like 20 hours long.
They played a lot of music in this movie.
And it was all terrible.
They probably had it, like, it was probably people that, like, they paid to have their music in the film, so they had a shoehorn it in there somehow.
Well, I watched the
movie, like,
if there's a band name, and there's no band names. It's all just, like, the you know, like, people's names. And it's just, like, you guys didn't even have a band? They're like, how about this? But this isn't really even, like, I wouldn't classify it as that music. You had this little number, which we don't talk about the scene just yet, but here's another little bit of the music.
Like an Arby's training video.
It does take place in the kitchen.
Oh God!
We're gonna make the big Montana.
Yeah, with curly fries. Oh, cock that flubby.
That's just another. The song at the end was awesome. I love the song at the end.
Oh,
yeah, you know who was the best at doing these kind of like these weird movies like this, and then they would like put all of their own songs and bands was Wings Hauser.
Oh, and, like, Wings Hauser.
He had so many of those awful movies, and he was always the hero. But like you would see the credits, and like his bands always had these names like Wings of Freedom, or you know, they always had some pun on his name, you know.
The Wings Hauser Project.
Like, Hauser about this piece of shit. Sorry, I'm laughing at my own joke. His phone just beat to it. He's like, I'm dying.
Pick one of these. He was about to house her.
That's the name of my band.
I'm going to start a band and call it that.
It's about this.
Oh, acid reflux.
How's about this piece of shit? Oh, it's not good in this movie. Oh, that's awesome.
Sorry. I think it works. Like, I've been told before that somebody's told me this. You know, you could just sit in a room and entertain yourself. I just proved it.
If I thought that by myself, I'd laugh.
Oh, I've been spending too much time in the car.
How's about this piece of shit? So the music was a piece of shit. But that, okay, so get back to this piece of shit.
Back
to the future, we're sorry.
Wait a second, let me just give you the last bit of music here. Hang on, I'll fast forward a little bit.
Yeah. Nights disappear one by one. Sometimes I stop. I can't recall half of whatever I've done. But you in your eyes, it's always so clear. Whatever I do will be right.
Wait for this chorus here. As long as you're here, whoever I do, as long as you're here.
Yeah.
Is there a soundtrack to this, Tim?
I hope so. Oh, I kind of like that song.
That was the better song. That was at least a little catchy.
That actually had a hook on it. A little hook.
Yeah. Because that the one that I was complaining about in the bar that went for like 20 minutes or so, like it wasn't even like a verse, chorus, verse. It was almost like a stream of consciousness. It just kept going and going. I was like, well, what is this? Is this Lester Bangs with the lyrics? This is this long stream of poop. I have a couple questions about
I can watch a Sammy Hagar one of these.
Montrose.
How's your mouth?
By the way, I just looked up at my computer about, and I still have like, I have the David Carradine death on my computer, just like the Wikipedia thing. And then the stars that attended his private memorial, Tom Selleck, Lucy Liu, and James Cromwell.
James?
Why Lucy Liu? Oh, I guess she was in Kill Bill with him.
Yeah.
So what's Tom Selleck? Do you know that David Carradine, they said that he made over 100 movies.
So, well, he was making this, I mean, he probably knocked this one out on a Wednesday.
Do you think that he was selective about his movies, or do you think he would just, whenever someone offered him, that he was like, whatever? Did he need money? Do you think he was wealthy? I mean, as an actor, I mean, again, not to go too philosophical, but do you think he made these movies just to get a paycheck, or do you think that some part of him really enjoyed, like, and really thought he was making a good film?
I think I'm going paycheck to feed a drug habit.
So he picked up the women. He killed about 100,
Then there's that car chase where like the two guys who obviously it was like the T Grips car, and they're chasing him, and like this chick had the shotgun.
Roxy.
Yeah.
You're forgetting about Roxy too. Because Roxy was the girl who liked him. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well,
and by the way, she was so skinny and weird looking. And like of all the women that they had in the movie, it was like, I was like, oh, this can't be his love interest. But by the way, when Roxy finally, when the guy from Indiana Jones, the bald German strongman, finally killed her, she made the weirdest sound I've ever heard for somebody.
Because the bald German henchman was sent by a boss man to make sure the deed gets done. And he just likes flexing his will on things. Like cutting the neck of Roxy. But the car
when
chase
he stabbed
scene,
Roxy.
The car chase scene.
When he stabbed Roxy, it sounded like he stepped on a cat's tail. Ranger.
I'm looking for that. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, it's like I gotta find that. Did you guys notice that, or was it just me being rude?
We'll find.
I don't know. It was she. That was just a weird death growl.
Okay, good.
But no, the car chase scene ended with the smoke bomb, and then John Tucker getting behind them and pushing them over the cliff.
I have to say, like, something positive, though, that I thought that was kind of a unique way to end a car chase rather than just blowing up or exploding.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that they had the smoke and then they stopped and they were just barely on that cliff, and then he pushed them off. Even though they did go to stock footage, I was kind of like,
when they cut to that, I was like, Toots is snow!
That's what I...
Oh, there we go. We have a sound for analysis here, so...
Okay.
It's poor Roxy meeting her end.
Kiss this.
Oh, you missed the best part. You missed the best part.
Hang on. Here it goes. I'll... There you go.
Kiss this.
What? Damn, bitch.
There is kind of a
that's what you get for keeping the thermostat too high.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a cat.
I don't know why that made me laugh. I think I rewound it a couple times watching it.
We could have done that better with the clawed glove.
Yeah, so she actually ends up helping John Tucker out, but after John Tucker pushes the guy over the cliff, what does one genius do? He goes to the cop's hangout, even though he knows there's a bounty out and other guys tried to kill him already. He goes to, like, the DMZ, and he walks in. The first thing that happens, someone pulls a gun on him, and then he, like, kills him, and then he leaves. And that's, like, it. It's like, what was the thought behind this? I mean...
Well, he was thirsty.
Yeah. He had some questions to ask. And all it really was just another scene of him trying to look like a badass. It's like, I'm going to kill
you.
Well,
who was the bartender, by the way? Because the bartender seemed really familiar.
I don't know. Oh, it's kind of Clement,
like the Beaver from Gremlins. Clement Blake.
He's known for some movies.
He had that really bizarre line, too. Like, when he shot the gun, when he said... The next one, I'll put a hole in your head where you can pack a lunch.
Pack a lunch, yeah, that's awesome.
I'll put a hole so big in the back of your head, you'll be able to pack a lunch.
Yeah, he was in Magnolia. I don't know if anyone remembers him from there.
I don't remember him, but I like him.
He's done a lot of TV stuff. He's in Fast Movie, Mouse Hunt. He was a homeless man in Mouse Hunt.
Hey.
But you're right.
He was in... The Tony Danza Show as Street Bum.
The one when he was a teacher? Well, you know, Tony Danza had a show with an A&E show, like a reality show, when he was a teacher.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Which one are you talking about? We don't want to go down this
road. He plays a lot of homeless men. He's like a homeless guy stereotype. Everything that I see at IMDb is like homeless man, bum, homeless man.
I know I've said this on this podcast before, but it's like I always wonder, like, if you start to get a complex as an actor that you always have to play those parts. I mean, like, on one hand you're working, but on the other hand, you know, you're playing a street urchin all the time or a degenerate.
Hey, it's work.
It's better than having lines like the one that you had in the movie, Tim. There you go.
Next one of you gorillas to try something in my place, he get a hole in the back of his head to pack a lunch in.
and that's how he got ended up to be regulated into Street Bum, is because he delivered a line like that, and I was like, okay.
Bum number one.
We just want him to gurgle some bum speak up now. Oh man! So he leaves the bar, right? And then where do they go? Where does he go next? They go.
He goes from the bar. He goes back to the bar. I'll tell you.
Oh yeah, it's a quadruple cross. because, like, they do a hookup with Nerd Guy on the computer, and he helps him out, but it was really just to get a trace on him. And then that's when the old guy, like, turned her into a cat. And then, yeah.
That's when they...
Well, don't forget, too, that he tells...
Bounty Hunters.
Oh, sorry. But don't forget, too, at some point that he tells the origin story of Billy.
Oh, God.
Who's his friend that Billy when he was five, he shot him.
And he paralyzed him.
Which, by the way, that will bring up a huge question I have for you fellas a little bit later. Like, when we get towards the end of the movie, it has to do with unfinished business. Like, or I'm too drunk to really care as a character. I don't know.
Jump back in the plot run there. This is where one of my questions comes from. They end up on the run again, and they're like hiding out in some warehousey area, and these bounty hunters want to come get the bounty on him now. They don't really care about the girl anymore. And so he gets out of the car to go hide, but he tells her to get down in the car. And
I don't know where this is going.
And so then the guys come up and they're checking the car, and, you know, Captain Mustache number one walks up there. And he's looking in the car. In the shot, you can see her. It's just like if I, like, bent over and tied my shoe in the passenger seat. And so she's just bent over like that. He, like, looks in the car, and he's like, oh, there's nobody in here. And it's like...
And don't forget that she's wearing a bright red dress.
He was right up against the window, too. And it's like, well, I can see her.
Yeah. Yeah, that was absolutely...
She's kind of, like, hunched over, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's a good hiding spot.
Nice.
So I guess it's that whole thing, if you just stay still, that it works. You just don't move.
I think she's your dummy.
maybe he thought she was like his Trader Joe's, like, canvas bags, like the, you know, grocery bags that in the passenger seat.
Hey,
nothing in there but some
bags. Yeah. Guys, really quick. I don't mean to, like, cut in, but I actually have to stop away for a couple minutes. Kelly missed her last bus, and she's like a couple blocks. Well, she's over 10 blocks away from the apartment. I'm gonna go.
Do you want to stop now, and then we'll finish later?
I shouldn't be more than like 5 or 10 minutes. Stay on the line, and then I could just jump back in.
Well, okay, man. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'll be really quick. So I just wanted to.
Okay,
I just got a phone call. So
yeah, okay, no problem.
Let me go get her, and then I'll be back really quick. All right.
Okay.
We'll go down some dark paths.
All right. I'll try not to run into the glove. So I'll see you guys. I'll talk to you guys shortly. I'll get her from the future. Bye.
Okay.
This has been night of a thousand different. Different issues, internet issues.
Piece it together, fine.
It's more interesting that way.
We could finish recapping, and then we can go tangenty when he gets back.
Yeah, I don't know. Recapping. I always wonder too, and I don't know if you think about this. Like, if there is anyone listening, does this make people like want to go check it out, or do they go, well, they recapped it, I don't really need to watch this.
No,
is this one for the team?
We don't paint that vivid a picture.
We're not that good of storytellers.
you can't just
it's like, what do you think you are, Garrison Keillor?
Where all the cops have pot bellies and kind of look like drug addicts.
Where sleeves were not to be seen, and Nick from Family Ties was a fashion icon.
Old Mr. Johnson was wanted for treason, and he was killed by David Carradine.
Mrs. Johnson collected the bounty of $1,000 by shooting him in his sleep. So basically, I guess we can. So yeah, Hokie made a good point with the bar thing. I didn't understand like why he went back there, because he didn't get any information. All he did is cause a ruckus.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I do. So then, this is what I always have a problem with movies of this time. And I remember even as a kid thinking about this is the woman in the movie hardly knows him, and then there's kind of like a nice thing where, you know, they kind of have each other's back. And then the next thing you know,
they're madly in love with him.
Yeah, and they kind of, in this one, I didn't even realize that she had fallen for him.
No.
Because they go kill her roommate and or her friend. They go kill her friend because she has the tape, and then they go find her friend, and she's dead, and she freaks out, and then, like, he hugs her like they've been going out for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like,
but he just met her that day.
Okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And he's going to kick some fucking ass. So.
Well, and it was so predictable, like, the whole thing with the friend, and it was like, oh, she's a goner. And they showed, like, that was kind of almost the feel of the Terminator, the first Terminator movie.
Ooh, that is
when Linda Hamilton, right. When Linda Hamilton's friend is cooking and she can't hear because she has her headphones on.
Yeah.
But,
she didn't listen to this.
Is this what she was listening to, really?
I think that's what she was listening to in Terminator. Pretty
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and even when I was younger and would watch like 80s horror movies and stuff, and like the kids at camp would play their boombox and it would play that kind of music, I was always confused because I'm like, I've never heard a song that sounds like that except for in a movie.
It sounds like someone didn't have money for royalties is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know how to, I mean, I don't know how much, but
it couldn't have been that much. You could have bought a crap song to crank out of that thing.
Yeah, or you know, I don't know. Maybe they just
tell me they want to be in the movie. You know.
Oh, and of course, you know. Yeah, well, I'm trying not to jump ahead, but so
right.
Then basically, like the bald guy kind of just goes on this kind of killing spree for his boss Jason. They're running from him, but then he just kind of confronts him and all, and then. Yeah, it's, you know, and he wasn't really I guess the fast draw was supposed to be his big thing, but I don't understand in the bar why everybody backed down after he shot the one guy. Because it was like, there's a whole bunch of you. You know, you could just
take him.
You know. Yeah, I never. And it's not like David Carradine, like, really strikes a really intimidating kind of.
Yeah, he doesn't scream, like, tough cop. He screams.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like Lou Ferrigno or someone, I could be like, you know, like from that, you know, from that, like a big muscly guy or somebody, you know.
I think after the bar, he does that. They go with the bounty hunter. Yeah. Then there's another car chase where his bounty hunter fellow brethren have a helicopter.
Yeah.
And they're shooting at him, and they're hitting the car with the gun, and it obviously isn't doing anything. So I'm thinking, well, why are you even shooting at him? Because that gun obviously isn't going to stop that car.
Yeah.
It's just like firing this gun from the helicopter. And I love David Carradine's signature move is it just kind of hangs his arm out the window with a six shooter and is trying to take a helicopter. Because that would work.
He shoots more than six times usually, too, with those guns. Well, I've wanted to count it, but I just quit. I just gave up. I was like, yeah, I'm sure it's one thing.
Well, they tried to address it. One of them, he got done, and he brought the gun in, and he reached on his dashboard, and he had another gun.
Yeah.
But I don't recall seeing a rack of six-shooters on his dashboard, so, because he fired, like, a few times.
Well, and here's the other thing. The other crime guy that was getting pinched, was he supposed to be in a priest costume?
Was he? I'm not sure if he was supposed to be a crime. Was he a crime boss, or was he just actually somebody who was just?
No, he was the crime boss because Jason, the other villain, was squeezing him for like 50%. And Jason was a cop, wasn't he, of some kind?
Jason was the leader. He was in charge of cops for whatever area they're supposed to be in. And then that guy was probably letting that guy enforce something for a cut, and then he made it 50%, which apparently wasn't a good idea because that guy shot down the helicopter with a rocket launcher.
Well, he also did that. I always thought I had this idea in mind, because remember when he's standing there and he's dealing with the guy, and he has the henchman with him, and he goes, here, here's something to show you how serious we are. They just shoot the guy in the office and kill him. I thought it would have been funny if the other crime boss would have been like, yeah, that was your guy.
I thought it was
his guy. Oh, man, why did we do that? That's such a stupid way to prove a point, killing our own people.
Yeah, seriously, I'm going to kill one of my own men. What?
Okay.
Give me your knuckles.
But so I guess, to kind of, like, kind of wrap up, so there's the helicopter. And then the big showdown with the balls with Baron von Raschke. And Baron von Raschke gets the better of him. Well, he shoots him too, doesn't he?
He does. He actually gets a bullet into David Carradine. But before that, they go back to apparently David Carradine's apartment where none of his enemies thought to look for him. Because it's his house, obviously, because there's robes with the hand that's on the back of his jacket. He has, like, bathrobes with that on it as well. And that's when I figured out that they were, like, a couple, because then there's, like, a note that's like, hey, I've gone out to take care of business. And
I said love.
Love, John. I'm like, when did they fall in love? She's, like, sleeping in his bed. She's, like, walking around. She's like, oh, no, don't go do that. And it's like, do you think it was over before?
Yeah.
And no, they're obviously at his apartment, but no, none of the bounty hunter people know that he has an apartment, apparently. So.
Right, and they get a good night's rest, too.
Yeah,
they you know what I mean? It's like, there's no, like, you sleep, I'll stay guard. It's just like, no, it's cool. You know, yeah, we just blew up, our helicopters got blown up, we're being chased, everyone knows they're, we'll go to my place. Totally cool.
I gotta go take the Cherokee out, take care of some business.
Yeah, with, he comes up with donuts.
With Jason and the three stereotypical bad guys. You got the guy with the dark sunglasses, and then the guy with the handlebar mustache, and then of course Baron von Raschke and his jeans.
But am I right remembering that they did shoot him? That he did take a
bullet? Yeah, he catches a bullet. I think they implied he got hit in the arm or something.
Because I didn't see any blood. But he was wearing a sleeveless shirt, so if he was shot in the arm, maybe she was blood.
Whatever it was, didn't keep the man down. So
yeah.
Didn't count. And they also did not count on his secret weapon.
The remote control.
The awesome remote controlled flying glove.
And that scene was hilarious. I was laughing.
I wasn't sure that you were going to do it at first, and then they did. It started flying around.
But you know, as bad as this movie is, I will say, though, at least that they did do a little bit of foreshadowing. Which shows that there's a little bit of skill involved, you know. They kept, yeah. I'm telling you, the remote, it will work, and then you just kind of get in and you have it.
So was I? Also
I'm not saying it's good storytelling. I'm just saying it's at least.
Supposed to believe that the plastic tool crate that glove was in was also remote controlled?
Yeah.
Because it flipped and opened, which I'm like, well, that's some high technology. That's 1991 technology.
Yeah. Why didn't they round it up? Why didn't they round it up to 2001? Especially when the movie came out, like I keep saying, where they, the 1990 it was made.
That's because it's because the guy wrote it in 1981.
Yeah, I guess that's. But would you think that maybe this is a theory that he's a conspirator, or he was like a doomsday nut, and he thought, yeah, 1991, everything's gonna hit the fan,
and there's gonna
so
be flying,
I'm gonna be ahead.
Power gloves and all kinds of crazy shit.
You guys wouldn't believe this, but while I was out, I saw a Cherokee Chief on the road.
Really?
Yeah, there was
you'll never believe it. You'll never believe when you were gone what Tim did to himself in the closet with a rope.
God. And that's why we're going to leave that in on the podcast. What you guys talking about?
No. Oh, man. But, yeah, we just got to be Baron von Raschke being beaten by a remote-controlled glove at the end. So we're almost wrapped up. And then, but there's
okay,
a,
so
there's
did, you guys
a glaring...
did you guys talk about the holy missile to the helicopter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the guy, like Jack the priest is somehow crooked in the future, too, which wasn't really too untelling. But it was like... Yeah, I was like, the priest came out of nowhere with a missile launcher and saved the day for John Tucker again. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, because I'm almost running out of time, but I've got to say, like, the glaring thing, and I just got to say it, is the bizarre thing that Baron von Raschke went and found Jimmy and killed him, right? And then, first of all, by the way, I thought it was in really poor taste that as Billy was shot and was falling over out of his wheelchair, that he hit a handicapped placard with his hand, and it was flopping around when he saw it.
I didn't remember he's handicapped.
Wasn't that like a big reveal, though? Like, I didn't know that.
No. He was in his... Because earlier John Tucker tells the story, because John Tucker shot him when he was five.
Oh, wow. So he made him his
bitch. You just missed the whole point of this movie, dude.
Dude,
were you even taking notes?
The whole point of this movie is the extreme power of the Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah.
That was so amazing.
Hokie, I imagine with your technology, not reveal your prowess, that you could probably take a Nintendo glove and make a glove like this, and I'm hoping you do someday. You're the only guy I know who could do this. Between the two of you guys, it is Nintendo skill and your tech skill.
It is so rad.
And you know, 1991, that's about the right time for the Power Glove.
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems about right. Yeah.
No, they ripped off the Power Glove. That's right. That's a get right down to the business.
The glove, then, did it look like, I just saw the movie posters when you guys did the movie, The Glove. Did they look similar at all?
This looks more futuristic.
It had more blue highlights, but it was pretty much the same thing.
Just a giant metal kind of, it was like a studded metal knuckle padded glove that supposedly you could like tear through a car with and stuff.
Right.
And plot. And he did. That's what was like blew my mind away at the beginning, where he like ripped through the car to stop them. Which, actually, getting back to that, he had the glove in the car, right? And the guys were driving around an amazing force. What was so powerful about the glove that it didn't just drag David Carradine along the road with him?
It was
just
magic.
Apparently,
you saw the blue lightning.
They couldn't.
That just tripped me out.
Well, and by the way, he was kind of a bad shot with the glove, too. Because, like, at the end, when he's shooting with the lasers, he's missing a lot.
Everybody in that movie was a bad shot. They were, like, in close range so many times, and they would just fire aimlessly.
And they're also they also weren't very good at hide-and-seek, either, if you can just crouch over in the car when someone looks in the
mirror. So did you guys get to the final showdown?
Kind of.
Sort of.
A losing theme.
Not the final showdown with Jason.
Yeah. Oh, good. Right, great. Because the only thing I remember from that is, run, Tucker! That's it. Because, like,
the greatest line in the movie, though, was in the final scene before the Jason scene, was when the bald guy, when Baron von Raske says to him when he's beating him up, he says, "I want another taste of that ass."
Wait a minute. I'm going to go find it. Give me a second.
And
I want some more of that. I think it's what it says.
Yeah, I want some more of your ass. I wrote it down. I didn't quote it either. I want some more of your ass.
Oh, wait, there it was. Hang on. I jumped too far. Let's go back.
They told me you were the best. Well, I killed women tougher than you.
That's too far. Hang on, let me just back up.
So
that's a good line, though.
While Tim's finding that ass.
Oh, here he goes.
Come on, Tucker. Get up. I want some more of your ass.
I want some more of your ass. Not really a good... That's really not good fighting words.
Oh, man. Yeah, so...
You know what, though? But that it worked for that guy, because that guy was such an awesome character. Whole idea of, like, I've killed women tougher than you. It's like, wow, that's creepy.
It would have been
like,
more...
That's my favorite character.
So we jumped into the future a little bit, because he, like, had the showdown with the bad guy and the bald guy and the two goons. And he, like, killed the two goons because he didn't bring the girl, because she was thankfully out of the movie up until the very last second. And, like, the bad guy, Jason, like, get cut the forehead and somehow it escapes because bold guy's like, run, Tucker, and then he fires a gun at him. Which, if you want something that bothers me in a movie, it's when you announce yourself before you shoot at somebody. It's like, hey, buddy, do this city flippity floop, and then you're like, bam, because that's exactly what he did. He gave Tucker a chance to kind of react, which was kind of ridiculous. So that was the fight scene, and the bald guy got some of that ass.
Well, then the flying club just whomped him, and that. That scene was so funny, but I have to say though, like it was kind of awesome in a really weird way.
It was like,
well.
So with that, okay, so yeah, so bald guy somehow eventually wins. He's kind of like the bad guy that kept coming back in the scene in Kentucky Fried Movie. When the guy eventually had to throw a transmission onto him just to keep him down. he's got John Tucker down. He's getting ready to call. He's going into some soliloquy before like blowing his brains out. And so like John Tucker whips out the remote finally, like the big reveal, right? Oh, the remote's gonna work. So he's like, well, what you gonna do? Call for help? So then it goes into like what seems like a
no. He said, "What are you gonna do? Change the channel?"
Yeah, that's what it is. Change the channel.
Yeah,
and then
don't mess up that bald guy's lines. Those are a good line.
Yeah. And then John Tucker like presses the button and presses him like 30 times for some reason. It's like he waited too long. It was like
it's a complex maneuver, man.
Exactly. It was like the same button over and over.
Yeah. Here we go. Here's the reveal. It's coming. Uh-oh. Got it.
What are you going to do with that thing? Change channels on me?
Yeah.
Let's count out. Let's count it out, right? One. All right, let's do it.
It just opens the back of the Jeep.
Two.
That's just the locks.
All right, three.
Just music.
Three.
Four makes it wiggle in the box.
Four, okay.
Five, it starts flying. Six, it turns. Seven, he didn't really push.
Is that a Pac-Man punch?
And wait, see here, he pushes again. Two for a gut punch.
Eight, nine.
Ooh, three, four.
Okay, so it took up to like seven or eight key presses before that glove actually did any damage. I would have popped a cap in his ass around the third one. I would have been like, I don't trust what the fuck's coming. Bang, bang.
Yeah, but that guy's tough. I mean, the Baron von Raschke is not a man to be trifled with.
I know. I get distracted when there's a flying glove punching me in the gut.
Oof.
Oof.
So
you know what would have been funny if like he was punching me so hard with the glove. And then the glove was going to kill him, going in for the kill. And it punched him so hard that he'd wet his pants, and it shorted the glove out.
I thought he said he punched him so hard.
And then he goes over and he kills him. Because he's like, my wetting my pants shorted on your glove, and I will kill you, John Tucker. And that's
said,
the end of the movie.
I thought you said he hit him in the gut so hard that he pissed his pants, and then he sharted some mud out.
He gunked up the works.
Yeah.
and then he's like the bad guy then is just walking and he's like, yeah, I still kill women because it's cute. And then he's like, he walks into the sunset like holding his like cheeks together.
Well, what if the glove flies that it's flying at him to make this big impact and it like dissolves and it turns at the last second and just sack taps him?
No! Just tap. That would knock me on my ass.
And the guy just drops to the ground because you do. And you're like,
And then,
the glove just totally overshoots him and like goes, like it flies off like a giant top fly. And he's like, oops, that didn't work. And then the ball guy killed him, and that's the end of the movie.
Well, he's never used the remote before. There's no guarantee it's going to work the way he wants it.
Yeah, and he was backing it up and hitting
it. It's a one-button remote. You can't be that agile with it.
So that camera shot of the glove flying, right? It reminded me of the Billy Kwan skits from Almost Live. You guys ever remember watching Almost Live in the 90s?
Oh, hey, hang on just a sec. You guys keep going. I've got to go for just a sec. I'll be right back.
All right.
I kind of vaguely remember Almost Live.
It's like some sketch show. Yes,
I do remember that.
And there was a sketch. It was always my favorite one. It was the same, Almost Live is the same stand-up comedy sketch troupe that did the High Five and White Guys.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. But they also had one of my favorite ones. The one that I always loved was Billy Kwan, and it was basically like Mind Your Manners with Billy Kwan, It was like some guy would always be rude and would piss off this Asian guy so much that he would finally get to the point where he would do like a super ninja kick. And it was like the same kind of camera angle flying around, except instead of like the glove in Future Force, it was like two, the guy's feet up in the air. And it was just like rolling, flying around, going around corners and stuff. It was hilarious. I'll put some up on the Facebook page.
Okay, so anyhow, so I'm back, but I gotta go. Because Tuesday nights are crazy. So I just got to leave you with one thing, and then I'll let you guys further discuss.
Yeah.
But, so I'm sorry if I'm jumping to the end, but so he basically, I don't know if he knew this, but Billy got killed, and he never avenged him or even talked about it. He just left this lady.
Yeah.
Am I right? I mean, Billy nothing was ever done about it.
Yeah, so, okay, so Jason goes to the cop's, like, office. He shows up. David Carradine shows up without the chick. David Carradine is like, what you gonna do? I'm turning myself in. So bad guy's like, kill him. And then at the last second, Nerd like comes through
right.
And like hacks it. There's your other foreshadowing. They put the bounty on this guy, and of course all the goons turn on him because everybody hates their boss. And they're like, bang, bang, he's dead. And like one of the slowest drawn out death scenes like ever. He gets shot like 50 times. It's like, so like David Carradine goes away. The chick shows up out of nowhere because she was like, she just shows up. And then like the Paul guy comes back and like you had to do one final shoot down or one final showdown. So he finally offs the ball guy by throwing a transmission on him. And then they just go off into the sunset.
Yeah. No talk of Billy. So
yeah. Billy got shot, man. He got shot when he was 5, apparently, and all he did was just Stockholm Syndrome, David Carradine. And then, like, he ended up in a pool of his own handicapped blood for all his trouble.
The sequel to this movie features David Carradine's son coming back in time to help him fight corruption, and his son's name is Billy Tucker.
Oh, God.
So there you go.
Well, hey, I've actually got to go now, so I will let you guys finish it, but let me just wrap up my part. I didn't think it was that bad. It was somewhat watchable.
I'd watch it. It had boobs. That made me happy. And the corny death scenes were getting a little drawn on until the glove really showed up at the remote control glove showed up at the right time.
That brought it home.
Just right when my last draw was about to be broke with the monotonous goon killing, it finally came through with something like kind of funny and hilarious at the same time. So it was
definitely watchable, and I want to see the sequel. I'm down for the sequel.
I'm gonna have to see the sequel.
Yeah. So don't fast.
Anyway, I just stepped on the cat. It sounded like Roxy.
Oh,
I really did too. I'm not even making a joke. I really did stepped on a cat.
I'll talk with Tim about this more. But John, the next movie is Jazz play like off of a movie I picked earlier. It's You're the Hunter from the Future. It's from the same guy who did. Oh, God, I forgot the space movie already.
Ega?
Yeah, no.
The one we just watched.
Yeah. What the hell was that?
Oh, the guy did
Humanoid. Yeah, the Humanoid. So
this one's called
Excellent. It's You're the Hunter from the Future. easy. Don't try to kill Roxy over there.
I have three Roxys running around, so ridiculous. But anyways, all right, guys. Well, I will talk to you guys soon. I will get ready to watch Your for the next time.
All right, later, John.
All right, man. Good night, guys. Bye.
All right. Click. So next time it's Your the Hunter from the Future.
Your
and I, and I encourage people who can find this or get on YouTube to find it to watch it too, so it would make our conversation a little bit more pertinent. Because we were all over the place with this one.
This is a fairly schizophrenic movie. So.
It is fairly. I mean, well, it's because it was no real good continuity or anything like that. It was just kind of a movie. And it was like a strung together scenes of David Carradine killing people and looking like a badass with his gut hanging over his belt and his skinny ass little toothpick legs. So it was It had boobs, which is nice, although they were kind of cheap. It was kind of a cheap boob shop. Joe Bob Briggs would be unhappy with that. And the death scenes, like the Toonses scene was pretty cool, and the Roxy getting cut was new. I didn't believe they'd go that far, and totally the glove really stole this movie.
Yeah, the glove. I didn't really even anticipate that occurring, so that made it all the better. But I'm anxious to see the sequel, and I hear tell that the glove does some more flying around in the sequel.
Ooh, don't fast forward that one.
Don't fast forward that one.
Oh man.
Oh man, so that is Future Force.
What are we gonna go out on?
We could go with the better song from the end credits, or I can do the little boobity boop business from the kitchen.
Boobity boop. Let's do the last song, because that really is the best song.
Yeah.
Very inspiring, too.
In this life is the name of the song.
The worker lady's friend next to cuts.
The chorus, in this life. That is synth-erific.
Did
EDA
do this song?
What's that?
Did EDA do this song?
I don't know. No. No. It's some guy's name.
Alright. Well,
here we go.
Until next time, y'all.
Don't forget to kick some fucking ass.
In this life.
But I'm gonna kick some fucking ass.
Disappear one by one. Sometimes I stop, I can't recall half of whatever I've done. But here in your eyes, it's always so clear. Whatever I do will be right. As long as you're here, wherever I turn, as long as you're here in this life. Can be empty and cold. Sometimes I wonder what I would do if I didn't have you to hold. But here in your arms, it's always so warm, and the fire will always burn bright. As long as you're here, wherever I turn, as long as you're here in this life.
The circus continuing, carnival tour.